This webcast is made possible in part by support from the listener members of the Classical Network, WWFM and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support.
Welcome to Inside Music. I'm your host, George Mariner Mole, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra, where we believe the more musical detail we notice, the more pleasure we receive from listening. Inside Music is made possible by Glenn Mead, an independent trust company providing investment and wealth management services with offices in Princeton, Morristown, and Philadelphia. Welcome to this evening's episode, Foreplay. That is, of course, F-O-U-R play, four instruments playing as in a string quartet. And we began this program with whom else? Franz Joseph Haydn, also known as Papa Haydn, for his paternal role in developing the large musical genre we call the symphony. But if Haydn had never written even one symphony, we could still call him Papa for his fathering of no less than 68 string quartets, obviously playing an influential role in the development of that genre of music. We were listening to the finale of his quartet, Opus 74, number 2. We might ask, who listens to string quartets anyway? It is true that a smaller subset of the classical music-loving population enjoys chamber music, such as string quartets and quintets and sonatas for various instruments. If you are already a part of this subset of classical music lovers, great! If not, stay with me for 30 minutes while we explore the string quartet. We're going to move forward chronologically, demonstrating the wide range of emotions composers have expressed using just four instruments with similar timbres. Here's the introduction to the first movement of Mozart's quartet in C major, K465. Be emotionally engaged as you listen. What kind of mood was Mozart projecting? What do you think? Maybe that felt kind of intense for Mozart. And of the 26 quartets Mozart wrote, you can tell why musicians gave this one the nickname The Dissonant. It doesn't remain that dissonant. Remember, we were only in the introduction. Here's a little of the mood that follows. Ah, there's the joyful Mozart we know and love. What a contrast of emotions. I'll say a bit more about contrasting feelings later. In our countdown of string quartet composers, we've had Haydn with 68, Mozart with 26, and now we get to the next member of what musicologists affectionately call the first Viennese school. And that would be, yes, Beethoven, who wrote 16 string quartets. We know that Beethoven could feel very angry and frustrated, not least because of the onset of progressive deafness. He began hearing noises in his head around 1796, definitely sensed that he was losing his hearing in 1798, and by 1801, he'd lost 60% of his hearing. The quartet in C minor, opus 18, number 4, was published in 1801. Listen for the painful, pounding accents Beethoven inserts in this music and the angry chords. Now, he doesn't stay there. I spoke earlier about the contrast of Mozart's moods in the sample we listened to. Our emotions change on a dime every day. We wake up feeling great, head out the door. At the first intersection, someone cuts us out with their automobile. Instant anger. But then we see that the person driving the other vehicle is very attractive. Ah, new, different feelings emerge. We're still thinking of that attractive person as we head into our office. On the desk is a letter saying, "We didn't get the funding," with an appropriate emotional reaction, perhaps dejection or even depression. And so it goes. If we kept a list of all the emotions we felt in a given day, and also made note of how quickly, on a dime, as I like to say, those emotions kaleidoscopically changed, we'd have quite a list. Let's return to Beethoven. We'll let him vent again, but allow the music to proceed through the transition from the first theme to the second theme. If, and that's a big if, we commit to giving abstract wordless music our undivided attention and allow ourselves to begin to notice the details of the music, I believe that we will find our own inner emotional life mirrored in these compositions. The composers of this music have the incredible gift of being able to express their innermost feelings in abstract musical sounds. These are not one emotion compositions like "She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah," and I am by no means denigrating popular music. I was a teenager of the 60s, God help my poor parents, and I loved and still love the popular music from that time. It's just that in wordless abstract musical compositions, even though they are listed as songs on iTunes, which of course they are not, Beethoven's String Quartet Opus 18 No. 4 is not a song. But if we actively, deeply listen, we may find ourselves feeling an emotional kinship with Beethoven, or Haydn, or Mozart. Schubert knows how I feel. Under those circumstances, listening to a Schubert string quartet might be a cathartic experience. And we need to get to Schubert, the fourth and final member of the first Viennese school. That was from the second movement of a work that Schubert never completed, sadly for us. But if we count this unfinished Quartettsatz, D703, Schubert graced us with 15 quartets, including perhaps his most famous. Here's a little of the third movement of his quartet subtitled Death and the Maiden. Lots of energy for us there. And just to underscore abstract music's uncanny ability to mess with our sense of real time's passing, those two Schubert excerpts were identical in length, 29 seconds. Here they are side by side. Which 29 seconds feels longer? My guess is that the slower tempo segment felt longer. Now, you may find yourself saying, I don't always want to listen to music that attentively. Well, neither do I. Sometimes I'm happy to just hear it in the background while I eat my sandwich, but I must actually make the choice not to listen, because I find music so fascinating. No matter what the genre or style, popular or classical, music is like a magnet to my soul. If I detect its presence, my attention just wants to go there. And why? Because enjoying the details along the way gives me so much pleasure, and because I find myself feeling things like, Brahms experienced this too. And speaking of Brahms, what emotional experience do we feel he was trying to express in the opening of the fourth movement of his string quartet in C minor, Opus 51, number 1? Thank you. obviously some incredibly painful feeling, something akin to our finding out that someone we deeply love has just been diagnosed with a fatal illness. Well, let's not dwell there, but rather listen to some of the gentle, homespun sounds that Antonín Dvořák wrote in his string quartet he composed while living briefly in the United States in the 1890s. His belief in the emotional validity of folk songs is borne out in the second theme of the first movement of his quartet in F major, opus 96, subtitled The American. If you're just tuning in, I'm George Mariner Moll, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra and your host for Inside Music. In this episode, we're exploring the range of emotions that composers express in their string quartets. By no means an exhaustive study. As always, I've been influenced by my own favorites. As we move closer to the year 1900, we find quartets by composers such as Claude Debussy, who were happy to inject some of their novel concepts of timbre into these works. Can you tell what's a bit unusual about the opening of the second movement of Debussy's only string quartet, written in 1893? And perhaps you can identify which of the four timbres he chooses to play the short melodic figure that keeps repeating. Yes, it opens with players playing pizzicato, and as the music continues, only the viola plays with the bow, that short melodic figure. Naturally, as a violist, I'm partial to such rare moments in the sun. Have I mentioned the second Viennese school? Or perhaps I should say, dare I mention the second Viennese school? This is the term musicologists use to group the music of Arnold Schoenberg and his two most famous students, Alban Berg and Anton Webern. The three of them employed, among other techniques, something called serialism, that is, serialism, having nothing to do with cornflakes or Cheerios, but rather referring to the use of such devices as the 12-tone row to create melodies and harmonies. If you have questions about the feelings projected in the next example from the second movement of the quartet Opus 3 by Alban Berg, I refer you to my earlier episode, Why Do They Write That Way? I won't ask you how long those 29 seconds felt. I'd like to conclude this episode with the playing of a complete movement from the first string quartet I ever encountered, the Mozart Quartet in G major, K387. Over the course of this episode, we've been listening to performances by the Kodály, Bélcsa, Emerson, Juilliard, Alban Berg, Eben, and American string quartets. Here now is the Emerson String Quartet performing Movement 1, of the quartet in G major, K387 by Mozart. If you caught my last episode, Gentle Goodbyes, you will notice that Mozart could not have given us a sweeter, gentler goodbye than he does at the end of this movement. This has been Inside Music. I'm George Mariner Moll, Artistic Director of the Discovery Orchestra, and your host. The producer is David Ozenberg. The Discovery Orchestra's Emmy-nominated educational concerts for American Public Television are available on Amazon.com and may be streamed free of charge by Amazon Prime members. For more information about the Discovery Orchestra, visit our website at discoveryorchestra.org. Inside Music is made possible by Glenn Mead, an independent trust company providing investment and wealth management services with offices in Princeton, Morristown, and Philadelphia. Inside Music episodes can be heard as webcasts at wwfm.org by selecting About Us and then Our Programs A to Z. Inside Music is an exclusive production of the award-winning Classical Network and wwfm.org. Tune in for our next episode, The Joke's on Us. Thanks so much for being with us. This is George Mariner Moll reminding you to listen better.